You're listening to the Speaking Tongues podcast. I'm your host, El Sharice. Each week, I sit down to a conversation with multilinguals where we discuss and celebrate language, life, and culture through our own perspectives. Episode 77, speaking Malayalam, Tamil, and South Indian languages with Basha Kids. Hello, language lovers. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Speaking Tongues, the podcast in conversation with multilinguals. This week, I'm so happy to be joined by Anita from Basha Kids to talk about South Indian languages, including Malayalam and Tamil. Anita talks to us about relearning Malayalam as an adult and learning Tamil with her husband and kids. She talks to us about the poignant subject of growing up in between two heritages, which is something that many Indian Americans feel growing up in the States as children of parents born in India. She tells us how her mission with Basha Kids is to help children understand cultural differences and ensure that they embrace their culture with pride. We talk about the Dravidian languages of South India, including Tamil and Telugu, and why she felt it imperative to focus on these languages in the development of her business. Anita tells us why inclusivity played a big role in starting her company and about the methods she uses to ensure that she not only meets kids where they are, but also makes the process simple for little learners. For listeners of the episode who are interested in helping their children to learn South Indian languages, Basha Kids is offering Speaking Tongues audience a 15% discount by using the code SPEAKING15. Big thank you to Anita for sharing your story and language and culture with us in this episode. If you enjoy this episode of Speaking Tongues, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the Speaking Tongues podcast on Apple Podcasts, or like and subscribe on YouTube so that other language lovers like ourselves can find the show. And if you've been a longtime listener of the show, or even a recent listener, you can now support the show on buymeacoffee.com. Links to all platforms are in the show notes. Okay, let's chat. Welcome back to another episode of Speaking Tongues. I'm here today with Anita. How are you today, Anita?
I am so glad to be here, and thank you for this opportunity.
I'm so happy to have you here, and we have so much to talk about, so much to talk about. I have so much to learn from you, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm so excited. I like to start each episode with the same question, and that is, what is your first language, and which languages have you learned to speak?
So my first language, I would say there's two. It's English, having grown up here in the US, but also Malayalam. And I grew up in South Florida, so I obviously learned how to speak Spanish. I studied French for 10 years in addition to that, and a little Italian. But I would say now I'm learning the language, it's called Tamil. And I am learning that with my children, and I am relearning Malayalam.
Oh, nice. How is that process going of relearning with your kids?
First of all, when you're a mom, and we are in this extra special pandemic situation,
right.
You know, it's hard to do anything. You know, anything I would call extracurricular, which is like out of normal life, right? Mm-hmm. So what I decided to do was to throw in with my kids. And it's like, okay, we want you guys to learn your dad's language, which he's fluent in. It was his mother tongue. And so I'm going to throw down with you and learn with you. And luckily for me, Tamil and Malayalam are kind of sister languages. So there are a lot of shared words. Unluckily for me, there's also words that the ba pa sound is actually inverted. So while I would say something with a ba in Malayalam, it would be saying like with a pa in Tamil. So both my husband are like, what did you say? It's just enough to be, you know, confused by. So the process of relearning, it just takes consistency and commitment and dedication. And I am being really simple with myself as I'm also a stay-at-home mom, and I am running started a new small business And my goal is simply inputs. As you learn any language, the very bottom line is as much inputs as you can get. And knowing that I'm sharing this time with my kids, it's got to be relevant to them. So we're watching a cartoon on this streaming service called Hotstar. It's called The Legend of Hanuman. And I have been recommending this left, right, and center. The animation is Pixar level. The storytelling is so crisp. And it's kind of an artful take on the Ramayana. But it's told from the perspective of Hanuman. And I mean, that's just an amazing mythological figure that all kids gravitate to. But the good thing about Hotstar, and you see this more and more with Indian media, is that it is available in 7 languages. So we watched the entire, the first season, 12 episodes, we watched the whole thing in Tamil with English captions. And now we're watching the whole thing over again in Malayalam.
Oh, that's amazing.
With English captions. But the goal is keeping it relevant for the kids and I, and inputs, you know, where, and I stopped the recording and, you know, like, did you hear that? Did you hear what they said? You know, I still use it, you know, my teacher's cap on. I'm not just sitting back and enjoying, right? So I pause and we try to say a word. Oh, they jump up and down because they heard a word they recognize, and we try some phrases. But yeah, that's how it's going. I wish I had time to like open a notebook and sit down and, you know, do a course, but I don't have that kind of time commitment right now, unless, you know, I decided to stop sleeping. But sleep is good for you. So.
It's necessary. It's very necessary.
I think when you're learning a language, it's that whole line of it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. Mm. It is a lifelong journey. So I am hoping to become, you know, learn more and become more fluent. But I'm being gracious with myself that knowing the situation that I'm in right now, I don't want to have unrealistic expectations that, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go pick up the phone and call my aunt in Kerala and have a beautiful conversation with her. It's not going to happen yet.
Yeah.
But it will happen.
It will. It will. Yeah. And I think that's such a good way to look at it. When you had that juxtaposition of your heritage language of Malayalam versus the Spanish that you heard in your community, and I guess you use the word academic exposure to these languages. What was that like for you?
Oh, you know, it's constant code switching. Mm. Constant code switching. And it was, you know, it was, I'm searching for the word, but those experiences were just so opposite from each other. And it's hard to go from English in school and this kind of Cuban Spanish, you know, Power 96.5 radio, you know, with my friends to home where, you know, my parents, I think, and I see this with a lot of not just Indian diaspora, but immigrant parents, where they kind of just give up after a while. Mm. Right. So it was hard. And you felt like you kind of had to choose. And there is this formation, the cycle of identity formation, where there is a period of time where you go through where you reject who you are. You know, very generically, that's true for all people, but as an immigrant experience, there will be a time where you reject your immigrant heritage and everything about it, because it's so different from everything we're living. And you are getting constant, you know, constant feedback from the community that you're different. That's not what we do here. Or you're getting the stereotypes put at you, or people who don't even understand that India is a country and they think, are you Native American? I would get that. Of course, that happens in school. That still happens in school, you know, with my children. You know, I see them going through everything that I went through. So it's really hard. It's a jarring. And I think that's what happens with heritage language learners, is that you receive these messages that you're not just, is your language different, it's worse. It's not good. It's not smart. that English is the way to go. Even the Spanish speakers in Miami would tell you that. And so now here where I live in the mid-Atlantic, definitely my kids are starting to get those messages from their peers and their school. And that's what we're trying to help them. I mean, my goal is to help other children not go through what I went through and soften the blow of wanting to reject who you are. So kind of a long answer, but.
You just reminded me of this story that I like you just, it's not a story, but just something that I remember from when I was a kid. I had a friend who was probably like my best friend. I was really young, maybe like 4, 5 years old. And her family was Indian. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And as I'm thinking about this, she was South Asian. I don't even want to say she was Indian because she might've been Bangladeshi or she might've been mm-hmm. Pakistani. I don't know. And I didn't have that vocabulary at that age of 4 or 5 years old.
Yes.
But her, she was like my best pal. And she used to invite me to her birthday parties every summer. Her birthday mm-hmm. was in August. And I remember like her father, you know, now that I think about it, I think that her father wore a turban. So they might've been Sikh. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is all coming back to me like right now in this moment. Yeah. Like I didn't really, I haven't thought of this in years. And her birthday parties were just so lively. And I remember that they had, you know, different traditions. Like I remember having to take my shoes off when I went to her house and I was like, okay, you know, like, all right. But I remember something and I remember it, this broke my heart. We were in school, in preschool at one point, and she pulled me aside and she said, I want to tell you a secret. And I said, all right. She said, I'm Indian, but don't tell anybody. And I remember looking at her and I was like, but you're Indian. Everyone can see that you're Indian. Like, why is it a secret? I didn't say that, but I remember thinking it just like, why would you not want to tell anybody that? And it, as you're telling this story and especially about what you went through and alluding to what your children are starting to go through, it just makes me think like, why should a child have to feel any type of anything but pride about who they are and where they're from? And it's, I'm thinking about it strangely in that when she said to me, like, it's a secret, don't tell anybody, as if it's something that is not visible to others and something that she clearly wanted to hide. And it just, even thinking about it again now, like it just breaks my heart that, you know, someone should feel forced, coerced, or for any reason to, especially a child. It's, oh my God. I really haven't thought about that in decades.
That's really touching. Thank you for sharing that. And I think with little kids, and I think back to my own experience, you really try to fit in and understand children's psyche and their development, right? They don't understand nuance. Mm. Everything's pretty black and white, and the world has very strict rules. So either you fit in or you don't fit in. And so the younger ones, elementary school kids, you know, they really try to do whatever they can to fit in. Some people change their names. They anglicize their names, right? Because, Arjun is too hard to say. So can I call you AJ? No. And this is a conversation I have with my kid. You help them learn your name because exactly. That is a gift to them to learn. There are different things. I remember having a conversation with my son, and it's, you know, it's like reliving my own past. And he was saying, you know, how kids made fun of him for his skin color, the food that he brought to school for lunch. And he's a sensitive kid, and it really, really got to him. And I had to explain. I said, do you know you have a passport? And your passport, you've had the great privilege to go to India and meet your family and travel around India. You went to the Taj Mahal. You know, this is something that we did, pre-pandemic. And I said, some of your classmates don't have a passport. Some of your classmates may never have left the state of Virginia, let alone even the environment of Northern Virginia, right? You live a really different life, but that's okay. And so instead of feeling bad about it, see it as something that you get to teach them and expose them to. So maybe one day they'll get a passport and they'll go to India.
Right.
Sometimes like, yeah, mom, whatever. He's getting to that age, very tweeny. I think with that, those messages, you have to keep reinforcing that message. And this is a really dumb story, but I'll just tell you this. I never enjoyed avocado until I was in my 30s.
Okay.
People tried to get me to eat avocado. I said, no, it's gross. I don't like that texture. What is that? It's gross. No, I love avocados now. And it just goes to show, and they tell you that with children, if they refuse a food when they're 6 months, try again, keep reintroducing it. Just be consistent. Don't judge them for their withdrawal, but just be consistent. Always have it there for them. And one day they'll be ready to take it.
Yeah.
And so this is why I feel heritage language is so different from mother tongue. Because there is a shame involved in it. There is elements of racism and colorism, xenophobia that you have to deal with, and all of these things as to whether or not you will adopt that heritage language, whether or not your parents will continue to reinforce that language with you. And you either feel shame that you speak it, or you feel shame that you don't speak it.
Right.
Yeah, I have a line where I've said this, it seems to resonate with a lot of people, where when you are Indian American or something / something, you are simultaneously both as well as neither. So here in the United States, if people figure out I'm Indian, I suddenly represent the entire country of India. I am the ambassador for that, not, drilling down into how different Indians are from each other. To in India, she's not Indian. She's from America. Okay. She doesn't speak the language. Who knows? Maybe she eats spicy food. I'm so different. I noticed it's even when I was on a trip. I got to take two trips when I was little, one when I was 6 and one when I was 19. When I went when I was 19, even when I wore all the clothes down to the chappals, I wore a putta, putta is the Malayalam word for bindi. People could tell. Like, I look just like you. People could tell you're not from here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know. Was it I walked in an American way? I carried myself differently. I wouldn't even open my mouth. And I would get the question, oh, where is she from?
Wow.
In India. So it's a complicated identity, but it's something that it doesn't have to be burdensome and full of pain. And I want to empower parents to not give up. But the fact is, if you're struggling with your child learning your mother tongue, their heritage language, you cannot divorce all of these things. You cannot teach in a vacuum, because you have to see those elements of what your child is going through. A lot of immigrant parents don't understand why their kids don't understand their language.
Mm.
Well, I speak it every day, or I do this, or I do that. Maybe they just don't want to. They also don't understand why their kids don't want to. And they might misinterpret a simple frustration of language learning is hard to, oh, now you don't want to be Indian?
Right, right.
So when you're learning a heritage language, you have to think about all these layers, and you have to have these talks with your kids. And then you're more likely to be successful if you don't ignore the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something you said, I picked up on about being the face of India when people in the US meet you. And that was a question I wanted to ask you. As far as everybody should know this, I know this, and I take for granted that I know this because I really do think, like, hello, it's 2021. We should all know everything, or because it's like, you know, it's all the information is right there. But India is vast and so different.
Yes.
All over the place. Yeah. 1.3 billion people, give or take, I imagine. As far as language, if we're talking about, there are hundreds of languages. And I think it's very easy for an outsider to think that India, everyone speaks Hindi. And Hindi is the definitive language of India. We're talking about South Indian languages. So you mentioned Malayalam, you mentioned Tamil. Tell us about some of the languages that one would likely hear in South India and what regions they're spoken in.
So first of all, I want to thank you for your cultural awareness. And I want to thank your listeners for exercising this cultural awareness. Because indeed, although India official languages are English and Hindi, Hindi is not spoken across the subcontinent. In fact, it's not even spoken in the majority of the country. When you think about the history of India, it was a bunch of princely states that were cobbled together, you know, thrown together by the British. They all threw their lot in. And so each kingdom was defined by different customs and different languages. Now, South Indian languages are very different from North Indian languages. And I've done a little research on this area for my own education and for making my product, but I would defer to a linguist on these things. But what I understand is there's the Aryan languages and there are the Dravidian languages. The Dravidian languages are South Indian languages. And so the four main languages are, I'll tell you, Malayalam, which is spoken in Kerala and in the Lakshadweep Islands, Tamil, which is obviously spoken in Tamil Nadu, but also Northern Sri Lanka.
Yes.
This is where the civil wars come from. And a lot of wars originate from language oppression, right? As well as Tamil is an official language in Singapore. There's a large diaspora in Singapore, yes.
How cool.
Then in Kannada is spoken in Karnataka, which is where Bengaluru is, the IT tech center hub of India, and Telugu, which is spoken in Andhra Pradesh and the newest state of India, Telangana, which kind of broke off from Andhra Pradesh some years ago. Those are the Dravidian languages. I also would mention the teeny tiny state of Goa, the beach loving place, used to be, you know, colonized by the Portuguese. They speak Portuguese as well as Konkani. It's not a Dravidian language, but Konkani is the regional language. So you literally go through state to state. There is a different regional language. And Indians learn, I will say this, Indians are multilingual. They don't lay claim to that because it's, yeah. But if you look at the stratification of a society, I know they can't see our faces, your listeners, but yeah, I'm making smirky faces here. But when you look at how society is stratified, when I say Indians are multilingual, I want to clarify that by saying it is the urban and educated middle class Indians. The schools are bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to learn English. Everyone's going to learn some standard of Hindi. But in addition, you learn your regional language. And every time you move around, you've got to learn the regional language for sake of survival. And I speak of this as my husband is from India, and he moved around India a lot. He speaks like seven languages. We had this cute moment where I introduced him to my aunties. And these two aunties actually grew up outside of Kerala. They grew up in Karnataka. And so he was meeting my aunties and my akka, which is my dad's older sister. She was living with them. And so it was kind of like, oh, I'm going to introduce him to the family. And my aunties were getting some food right or something, and they were talking to each other. And my husband, Arun, he's like, hey, do you know what they're saying? I was like, I don't know. Is that Malayalam? Man, my Malayalam is so bad. I don't understand that. He's like, they're not speaking Malayalam. They're speaking Kannada. Okay. No wonder you don't understand. But he went up to them, started helping them in the kitchen, and he started speaking Kannada to them. Oh man, he won them over. They were like, oh my God, look at this boy. He's speaking our language. What a nice boy she's found. But just that fact, and I know that's this is what your whole podcast is about, right? That connection right there. They were so delighted. And they couldn't believe, like, you know, like, oh wait, this guy, he's Tamil. Oh no, what are we gonna do? Yeah. But boom, he spoke Kannada to them. It was all good. So,
I love
yes.
that. I want to take a step back to Malayalam, and you mentioned that you're relearning it now, but you grew up with it as a child. If you don't mind sharing, of course you don't have to share anything too personal or painful or anything, but what happened in between?
It's a good question, and it's definitely worth answering because I know so many people have had this experience. Any immigrant has this experience, right? Where my mom told me, Anita, you were fluent in Malayalam until you went to school, until I went to kindergarten. And what happens when you go to kindergarten? You are surrounded by English for 8 to 9 hours a day. And that in itself, mathematically, how do you challenge that amount of input, right? And also growing up in South Florida, we had a good little group of Malayalis that we hung out with, and I would even clarify that further to say Malayali Christians, right? Because I didn't know the Malayali Hindus in Miami. I know some now, but I was like, how come we didn't know each other? Well, they went to temple, okay, and I went to church. And so, whereas if we were in India, we would have known each other. But when people come here, they get very insular with their communities. And so, even in South Florida, though, there wasn't that much of a community. I went to a white evangelical Baptist church. And then as I grew older, there were more and more immigrants. There started to be little pockets of Indian churches. It started out with little Bible studies, and then there was a Brethren church, a Catholic. Then there was a Jacobite church. Then there was a Marthoma church, and now there's like everything down there. My cousins, I'm originally from New York. I was born in New York. I have a ton of family out there. People who grew up in these major metropolitan areas like Houston, Chicago, New York, New Jersey, they had much more opportunities. Those kids who were growing up in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they were more likely to have a larger, well-structured community, that they not just have their community parties, that they hear their aunties and uncles speak in Malayalam, but they have church in Malayalam. They have community events in Malayalam. They maybe even had the benefit of taking Malayalam classes taught by volunteers in the community. So my family in New York, they all are not just, they're receptive bilinguals, so they understand everything. But they also can speak, and some of them can even read. But those are people who are in those major metropolitan areas. But if you are an Indian first gen in the US and even grow up in some of those places, it was just hard for you. You know, it was hard unless your parents were really intentional. And then it gets into the immigrant experience, right? My mom came to this country because she was a nurse. There's a stereotype, Malayali nurse. Yes, my mom was a Malayali nurse. And many nurses immigrated here in the late 60s and early 70s because of a special visa that was given. They wanted more healthcare workers. And so there was a whole crew of Malayalis that came. And my mom brought my dad over. Interestingly enough, some people think it's always the other way around. The husband comes and brings a wife. Well, my mom was the breadwinner there, and she brought my dad over. When I was growing up, she was working two jobs. She literally worked 7 days a week. She worked 5 days at one hospital. Then she worked the weekend overnight shift at another hospital. And my dad had a slew of little jobs before he found his calling. And it's an American dream story, but he started his own business. So if you have someone who's an entrepreneur, you need someone who's stable.
Right.
And so I look back at it now from my lens of being, you know, the age that I am now and being a parent. I understand what they went through then. I understand how hard it must have been to be like, I am just trying to survive and put food on the table, make sure that my kids have what they need. How am I supposed to do languages as well? And the next question is, why should I? Because we chose to move to this country, why should they learn Malayalam? Where are they going to use it? Are they going to go back to India? You know, what's the point of them learning the language? And I say these questions because these are the questions that are going through a lot of immigrants' parents. That's what they're thinking through. And so, like, we all know we should drink 8 glasses of water a day. We all know we should get 8 hours of sleep a day. I should probably walk every day. How much of us can do it when we're stuck in the hamster wheel of life,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think that's what happened. I know part of it too. This is why I chose to make the product that I did. I literally pictured myself as a young child. I knew I was the kind of kid who took initiative, right? I would tear through activity books. I would read. I was very creative. I would write stories. If you hand me a deck of vocabulary cards, I would have gone through them. I would have known all of them. I would have pestered you to play with me. You know, I would have told my friends about it, you know, but I didn't. And one of the other frustrations that parents have, especially when you are learning a language that has a different script, is you go back to how were you taught? Well, I learned, you know,
phonics.
You know, yeah. All of the, well, it's not even phonics. Those, what I said just now, those are alphabets.
Right.
And there is one alphabet for every single sound. And what's so wonderful about the South Indian languages, even I think all the Indian languages, they are actually written phonetically. And you could never get it wrong if you learn to read. You would never mispronounce it. So I give the example of the word yacht in English. That breaks every phonetic convention there is.
It sure does.
I want to thank, you know, every person who is an English language learner, hats off to you, because English is a very hard language to learn. Now that I'm relearning Malayalam, I go back and I look at the script. There is one letter for every sound. If I could learn to read Malayalam, I would never make a pronunciation error because there's no way to misinterpret the word. It's not yacht, it's not yacht, you know, it's not yacht, you know, it is what it is. So parents go back and are like, well, first thing you need to do is you need to learn to read this, and then it's this magical, beautiful, swirly looking script that looks like flowers and leaves. And like, what is that? You know, and that in itself is a barrier for kids who are growing up outside of India, because it's so intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
It is so intimidating to look at that script and think, what is that?
Right.
I'm supposed to, it is just so different. And so I started out with my kids and knowing my own, I don't know how to read. I'm like, listen, we're not going to learn to read. We're not going to learn to read and write right now. What I want you to do is to have a simple conversation. Can you answer how are you and tell people what your name is? Tell me if you're hungry. Can you understand me when we're at dinner and I'm asking you, is the food spicy? Would you like more water? You know, velam veno, you know, how are you? In Tamil, it's epidi irikin. You know, you should be able to understand from other people these simple things. I want you to have a conversation. Let's be practical. Mm-hmm. I don't need you to write essays in Malayalam or Tamil right now, or it's not going to serve you a purpose at this moment. So that's something where I approach parents now and I'm like, don't worry about script so much because of the barrier. Don't let that become a barrier to learning the language and really conversing practically with people, right? And you know, as a language learner, what's the best way to learn a language? Throw yourself in the pool, try to have a conversation, and like literally, let's talk about dinner. Can we talk about what's on our plate today? What'd you do today? That's how people talk. Nobody talks about, I was actually, saw an instance of this where there is a young lady who's in Hindi class and the teacher's like, I don't know why she's not speaking. And I was trying to give her, you know, hear out her issues and see if I could give her some coaching on it. She showed me a website that she told the girl to look at and study on her own. And it was one of those, you know, learn a language websites. And it's telling this girl, this 13 girl, how to rent an apartment. I said, excuse me, why does a 13-year-old girl need to learn how to rent an apartment? No wonder she's bored.
Right.
It's not relevant. It's not relevant. So making it relevant to the kids, like, hey, tell me, let's look at your favorite book. You know, I've been doing these bilingual read alouds on my Instagram live, where I take a book, a children's book that is well-known. It's Mo Willems' Piggy and Gerald series. Mm. They are so easy to understand and they're very easy to translate.
Yes.
And it is on every preschool library, every kindergarten library has this book. So they love this character. They know this character. So I say, take the book and do a double translation. Read it in English one page and then do the translation in your language. Because why? You already hook them in.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're just exposing them to the language. So it just gets back to, you can't, one of those barriers to heritage languages, you can't teach the way you were taught. Again, you've got to recognize the environment your kids are growing up in.
Mm-hmm.
And so make it relevant to them, make it interesting to them. And just, again, always have grace. I have to tell that myself all day, take a deep breath.
No, but okay. I do think it's interesting, and I've definitely talked about this other times on the show, and it's something that I'm realizing in the year and a half that I've been recording these episodes, is that, you know, I always gave myself such a hard time because I would be in school, and I did well in school getting good grades because I was supposed to get good grades. That's what you do. You don't want to fail out of school, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think as an adult learner outside of the classroom, the problem that I was having was just, I didn't really have a practical experience and the understanding of how to express myself as an adult. So like when you're in school and they're teaching you sentences about, well, what does your family do? And who are your roommates? And, you know, what's your favorite subject in school? And what's, you know, all these kind of things, like I'm past that. Like, I want to talk about, you know, I want to talk about the episode of Housewives I watched last night. Like, I want to talk about, you know, going to a really fun bar and doing karaoke or something, or a song that I heard in a bar, or anything like that. And I realized actually so recently that I should have just been spending more time talking. And I feel like the problem, especially here in the US, is that we wait until we get to those advanced level classes to start having conversations that are meaningful beyond just like, what color is this piece of candy? And what what shirt is Brian? What color shirt is Brian wearing? Okay, but I don't really care. So
yeah. oh, you know, any teacher will tell you that.
Yeah.
The best way for your student to learn, it's tap into their motivation, make it interesting and relevant to them. And so I totally believe conversation should start on day one. Immersion should start on day one. And although the products that I made, it teaches through English, it's because you've got to meet them where they are, right? And so I actually see a lot of people that I've spoken to who are interested in my product. They are from blended families or intercultural, interracial families. So either the wife or the husband is American, white American, African American, and they feel a need even more so to hold on to that Indian culture. So that whole thing of, oh, I can't help my kid learn because I don't know the language. Why not? Learn with them. Learn with them, which is what I'm doing with in my household, right? Where the only language my husband and I have in common, despite both of us being multilingual, but the only language we have in common is English. And so we face that, right? With his primary languages being English, Tamil, and Hindi, and then all these other little Indian languages. And me, you know, having, I'm more fluent in Spanish, right? I'm more fluent in Spanish and French from studying than I am in Malayalam. I'm like, okay, well, we have a choice to make. Our kids are going to be in an English environment. How will they learn? Why should they learn? And I said, they've got to learn some of their Indian languages. And again, I clarify that with level your expectations about what they're going to accomplish. But I want them to have a positive exposure and a positive perception of the language. And that being bilingual doesn't mean I speak Spanish and English, right? Which is, I feel like the word bilingual is, when someone says bilingual, that's what everyone thinks. Oh, you speak Spanish? No, you mean any language. And so I often say multilingual, because Indians are multilingual. They speak two or three languages, at least the majority of diaspora do.
This is just something that I wonder about often in multilingual countries and communities. And I certainly think of how in the Black community in the US, we speak our vernacular English with one another. We speak it maybe in our churches. We speak it with, you know, social gatherings and things like that, but we don't speak that way at work. We don't speak that way among people that we don't know. And I mean, that's just a very small change. But I think about some place like India, where there are so many languages, and I can imagine that there are stigmas attached to people from certain parts of the country when they go to maybe other parts of the country. So it makes me wonder about, and I know you don't have an answer to this, and I'm going to move on, I promise, but I'm just explaining my thought process. It does make me think of how language can be used to keep someone from being disadvantaged as they move through their world, and it allows people to acquire social mobility, or at least strive to be socially mobile if they're able to speak a language that maybe appears to be more formal or is used more formally, whether or not the other things attached to that are relevant in this situation or not. But
I'll tell you, you know, my husband grew up all around India, and he now, if you ask him, he claims to be from Mumbai. He's a Mumbaiker. He had this formative experience of going to college with these four guys. these guys, I mean, they're like 30 something years removed from college. They still get together, have Zoom reunions, and it's wonderful, but they're from all different parts of India, all different types of Indians, and they have this such a brotherhood. They're one Sikh, one Muslim, one North Indian, one South Indian, right? And they are such brothers, and I love to see it. And they affectionately call him Thambi, which means little brother, which could also be a slur, depending on who you're saying it and how you're saying it. But they say it to him with love and affection, our little South Indian brother. So even those little words, they can give you connection, right? And here in the US, we all have our Desi radar, right? So you're walking down the street, like, oh, I spotted, I said India, I think that person's Indian. What do I do? Do I look at them? Do I say hi? Do I give them the nod? And I had that experience, or I saw some family and we all smiled at each other, like we were just so happy to see each other. But just, or if I would meet people, we do the little head nod, little wink, like to instantly bond with each other because that's the body language that's universal across India, right? And so it puts us in a place where, hey, we're okay with each other and we have this shared experience. So like if you drop a name of a movie or you drop a name of this actor, or you say, hey, this is the type of dry, chutney powder I have at my house. Or, this is the type of ghee that we use, or like you said, the chapals, that you take off our shoes. We all have that in common. Though I will also say the flip side of that is when you're in the US or when you're a diaspora, right? You end up, there are two things that can happen to you. You can be very insular in your community, or you have to adopt all these Indians around you as your brethren. Even though you have things you don't have in common, right? So these are little things that connect you, but then I have no reference for what they're saying sometimes. Like I didn't really grow up with that much Bollywood. We weren't that big into it in my household. So people will be dropping names of movies and be like, I didn't see that one. Oh no. I'm like, yeah, know what you're talking about, but yeah.
I always say this, like I'll tell someone, oh, I love Indian food. And then I think, wait, no, I love Indian food as I know it in the US. Because, first of all, you're saying Indian food, and we've already said more than once, this is a country of regions, this is a country of regional differences and changes. So how can, my pakora and my tikka masala represent this vast continent? So I always think about the things that I see. Like, yes, I've heard of Diwali. Yes, I see women wearing saris. I went to the Indian supermarket the other day, a couple weeks ago, and I saw all different types of people walking around the supermarket, right? But it does make me think, like, I'm walking around there, I'm like, well, I see what I'm looking at, but it didn't mean anything to me necessarily because I didn't know where it was from. I just knew it was from, South Asia, but I didn't know, was it from Kerala? Was it from Mumbai? Was it from Delhi? Was it from Bangladesh? Was it? I ended up buying one thing and it said like made in Pakistan, and I was like, if I hadn't looked at that label, I never would have known. But my point is, I do think a lot about how the culture is exported here and interpreted here, for, I guess, for non-Indians, I guess, for non-Indians, for Amer for non-Indian American people. How do you view that, or how do you see that? And I guess even further, like, how do you see, or where do you see representation of your Malayali heritage within that fabric of Indian Americanness?
Oh, first of all, I love the question. And I again applaud you for your cultural awareness. People, please don't say I like Indian food to Indian person because it's annoying. It's like annoying, like the where are you from question. I appreciate you for acknowledging that there are so many differences. So when it comes to Indian food in America, more than likely the bulk of what people are experiencing is North Indian food. Okay. And it's pretty much like you'll get palak paneer and chana masala and some garlic naan, but
Garlic
I
naan.
actually never got to experience a South Indian restaurant until I came to the DC area. And there was this amazing little restaurant on M Street in Georgetown. It's no longer there, but they apparently have one out in the burbs. It's called Amma's South Indian Vegetarian Cuisine. I was like, this is the place for me. The other thing I did when I was young was I decided to become a vegetarian. That will throw everyone's stereotypes at its head. A lot of, again, getting to this culture that's exported, everyone assumes that Indians are vegetarians. Malayali Christians are not vegetarians. They are decidedly beef and mutton eaters. Okay. So, but I chose when I was 13 to become a vegetarian. I read some social justice books, read about factory farming. I could never look at my chicken curry the same way again. And that really pissed off my parents. And then I went and married a Hindu. That really pissed them off. So, but that's what we did have in common, that we're vegetarians. So the South Indian vegetarian cuisine was so amazing to experience, because it was like the dishes my mom made at home. And you can get these big thalis. And so I encourage everyone, please check out different kinds of Indian restaurants. And there are Indian fusion restaurants. There's Indo-Chinese. It is amazing food. It's not Chinese food, it's not Indian food, it's both. And it's so spicy, and it's this delicious flavors and the wonderful way that you can cook vegetables. It's just amazing. So I applaud you for that awareness. Now, your original question was about how is Indian culture represented here? I want to say that, right, it's very superficial, and that it's hurtful to our children. It's hurtful to our children growing up here to have to see how it is represented in American media and culture. So, it's not the sari, for example, is worn differently depending on what part of India you're from. Some people take the pallu, which is the part that hangs, they throw it over their shoulder. In other parts of India, they pull it over their shoulder across the front. There's tiny little differences like these. And I say that it hurts kids because, again, you are expected to be an ambassador for the entire country. My little one, my youngest, did not know yoga came from India. We had this discussion earlier this year. She does Cosmic Kids yoga. She did yoga in PE. Everybody knows yoga in her class. And I said, well, did you know that they don't even use the Sanskrit words, right? People, this is pigeon pose, downward dog. There's this, or they make up, let's do a crab walk, which is great. Meet kids where they are. They miss out the step that, yoga was developed as an ancient, spiritual form from India. And so, I had this talk with my daughter. She's like, oh, wow, I had no idea. And then she was wearing, like, oh my God, did you know yoga was from India? telling everybody. But it's hurtful because it makes them feel like they have to live up to something, or they always have to constantly explain themselves or reference it. Well, that's what you saw, but that's not how I do it at home. And what I love, having joined this language community, what I love seeing in the last year especially is this burgeoning movement of, there's a hashtag, South Asian Kid Lit. There's a hashtag for it. There are whole publishing ho houses that are dedicated to producing books and promoting books written by South Asian authors that have South Asian characters that look like South Asian kids. These books talk about all elements of culture. They talk about They talk about all the festivals. They talk about different parts of India. There are so many people working in this space now. It really inspires me, and it just fills my heart, because I was like, I wish I had this 30 years ago. And that's kind of why I made what I made. Even on my vocabulary cards, our body part cards, I purposely made sure the kids had brown skin, not light brown, brown skin. I'm like, because when I was looking for products for my kids, right, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube, right? There's a lot of stuff on YouTube. I'm like, okay, we're going to watch a Malayalam cartoon on YouTube. And out jumped a little white girl with red hair and a little white boy with blonde eyes. I mean, blonde hair and blue eyes. I was like, and my son's like, I don't buy this. They're not speaking Malayalam. Who are they? They don't look like me. I was like, I can't share this with my kids. You know, I, as much as I want them to have the input, I couldn't on principle do it, because I thought, again, they're not seeing themselves in it, right? So I'm like, we've got to be out there creating that representation.
So let's talk about Basha Kids. Let's talk about you're telling us how you got started and what led to that decision to have the representation of South Indian languages and inclusivity. Tell me all about it. Tell me when it got started. Tell me, you told me why, but feel free to elaborate on that. And how do you work toward promoting representation and inclusivity, also children with learning challenges?
It got started with me looking for products to help my kids, right? And thinking about what I wished I had when I was a child. And so everyone has in their house, I think I showed it to you last time, it was the big book of my first 100 words, these big board books. And you want to encourage literacy. You know, you want to encourage cognitive development at early ages. So you have these board books that have pictures of animals or things and has the English word underneath it. And I said, why am I only focusing on English with you? I know a baby's brain can learn multiple languages at the same time. I know that. So the best time for you to learn to be bilingual or multilingual is right now, you know, between the ages of 0, you know, to 8. There's such a learning curve, right? Their brains are like nothing like our brains right now. Super sponges. So I, you know, knew, I wasn't confident that I knew Malayalam enough to even tell my kids what all of these words were. I didn't want to be imposter, and I didn't want to teach them something wrong. So I said to my husband, Arun, we've got to focus on Tamil, because you definitively know things and you can teach them. But I don't speak Tamil, so what do we do? So I got a Sharpie, and I started writing in these board books and translating everything into Tamil. But since I can't write Tamil, I wrote all in phonetic English so that I could understand. And so I would listen to him, he would tell me, and I'd write down what I thought what it sounded like in English. And then, you know, I'd sit with my baby on my lap and be like, okay, here, tiger, puli, you know, lion, singam, right? So we would just do triple the vocabulary. You know, and I started, okay, now he's ready to move beyond board books. Now what do we do? And so there was that surge. I didn't want to drive, you know, out into the burbs to take into classes, and knowing that my son was already showing signs of having these learning challenges. It's like, I need you to be in a secure environment. I don't want people to get angry at you or punish you because you didn't understand them, or you weren't paying attention, or you were moving around too much. So let's see what I can do with you at home. And then when I looked for even the YouTube videos, I did find some that I like. I do have a list of recommendations. Then I found the others. And most of them were not made for my kids. They were made for kids in India. And they are all teach the alphabet. And I'm like, but I don't need you to learn how the alphabet is right now. I just want you to converse. So I just started drafting on a PowerPoint, Very rudimentary things. And I came up with, okay, here are the numbers, here are the body parts, here are colors. And then I came up with basic repetitive questions that a parent can ask or a teacher can ask, like in Tamil, how do we say this? You know, Tamil il red epidi solave. What is red in Tamil? How do you say that? What does it mean? And the child will have to answer, Sivappa, right? So it's both getting them to understand the question as well as getting them to understand the vocabulary. So Malayalatil, I, ingire parayum. How do you say I in Malayalam? Kanna, right? So then I would show the kid would just see the picture. The front of the card is the picture. I actually had some here to show you. Not that it would show up on the podcast, but picture, phonetic, right? Pujiyam, zero in Malayalam, and made it as simple as possible with phonetic blends that children are used to seeing in their classroom.
Right.
So even if I write it on the, if I wrote it in Tamglish or Malayamglish, Manglish, mangling the Malayalam language, that's what I do. you know, I would write Pujiyam, P-U-J-Y-A-M. If I was writing it, like I'm writing it to someone in a text or whatever, but here I've written it P-O-O-J-E-E-Y-U-M. It's like sight words,
right.
Simple sounds that kids can put together. And the goal is that the cards get you 80% of the way there. And they're not meant to be like SAT vocabulary studying cards, okay? That you, I include games and things that you can play because number one, kids learn through fun, but they also learn through connection.
Yeah.
They learn through their parents. They learn through their grandparents. They learn through their community. They learn through relevance. So, you know, learning through an app, several people think, Anita, why don't you just make an app? It's like, I want to make screen-free products because as we've seen in the last year, our kids have way too much screen time. And you've also seen the quality of what they get out of the screen.
Right.
And while Duolingo will work for UL and for me, because we're adults, we'll put in the time, the commitment, we know how to use the app and what it's for. And we'll also regulate ourselves to spend small batches of time on it. Kids don't have that power of self-regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they learn best through movement and play. And so I didn't want to just throw another app out there. I wanted to do something where it's me and my child together.
Right.
I wanted, let's create a memory together. Or my husband and my kids. I literally, one day I happened upon them in the kitchen and my husband was playing with the color cards. But what he did was he took all the vegetables out of the fridge and had mixed them up and then was asking the kids, what color is this vegetable?
Oh.
You know, so, okay, the eggplant, the brinjal, this is purple. You know, we say uda or this is a jamun colored or, you know, all of the, it was just super fun. I don't think he ever would have done that on his own. You know, gone in the fridge and let me do this. It's because we intentionally thought about a method and we intentionally thought about making it playful.
Right.
The kids were lapping it up. They were laughing. They were just like, Appa, you're so funny. And, you know,
yeah.
But again, I'm hoping to make a positive association with them. So it's learning through phonetic English. And then I kind of, that's step one. I consider that the step one product, which you really can use with any child, any age. The step two that I made, I released in the spring were actual activity sheets or printables. And there we introduced the script. So I had to learn the script, you know, and what a difference it made to the quality of our product. We've really elevated our product because that's when I really started to understand that the script is key to pronouncing it correctly. And so it is in that way so much easier than English because you know which letter, which sound you're supposed to be making.
Right.
And so the worksheets include the letters, and my daughter and I did a game on one of the color printables where she and I kind of came up with that on our own. It wasn't even something that I purposely made, but she was looking at a sheet, had six colors on it, English, phonetic English, then the script. And she started saying, oh, Karepa, Chuvapa, looking at these colors in Malayalam, and said, oh, the P, I see. She started circling the script and finding the similarities and seeing the pattern. And right away, if I wrote that letter in Malayalam for her, she knows that it's P now. So it's fun. It's a fun way. It's a different way to learn. And it's you can do it on your own, or you can do it. I say, and I've gotten messages from people who've gotten the product that great. They're showing gratitude. They're like, my mom and my son are connecting on a way they never did before. That the grandparents get involved, and they start doing the cards with the kids, and it's just this cross-generation connection that wouldn't have happened before. If they didn't have this little tool, this tiny little art learning aid to create that connection. So that's really what the goal is. And what now I've set a very high bar for myself is that I've gotten so many requests for various languages that said I'm going to do 10 languages, 10 South Asian languages, 10 vocabulary decks, 10 activity books. And that we eventually want to branch out into podcasts where you can hear all of these sounds, right? Because you've got to hear it from a native speaker. If like me trying to teach my kids Tamil and learning with them, it's okay. But we always go to my husband, like, okay, wait, how do I say this properly? Right? So I always say advocate, learn from the native speaker, not from the non-native who's trying to learn, just because kids have that superpower that we don't. It's that power of the listening comprehension, because their language skills are being developed really between the ages of, 0 to 4, their verbal language. So if you are exposing them to proper pronunciation, constant immersion, they may not speak it to you right away, but when they do, it will come out well, whereas me now, in my late age, in my middle life, and trying to learn, it's much bi a bigger slog, right?
Can you at this point in time say what languages we can be looking forward to next?
Yes. So we have products in Hindi, Tamil, and Malayalam. And later this year, I hope by Diwali time, it'll be here. We will have Marathi, Gujarati, and Telugu. I'm also releasing a new vocabulary deck on animals. It's super cute. It's the cutest deck yet. They're really cute illustrations. They're not cartoony. They're more realistic. But I love how this card deck has developed. And we're adding something new to our vocabulary decks. So I've developed a kind of a pronunciation key. And so if you think of a Venn diagram, these are the phonemes or the sounds of English. These are the phonemes of Malayalam. There's places where they overlap, right? But there's places where they don't overlap. And so those sounds that are made in Malayalam that do not exist in English, parents have to be really intentional about teaching that and building the listening comprehension. I learned myself, I actually did a silly little reel about it yesterday, but the word for banana in Malayalam, barapuram, okay? It is not an L and it is not an R. It's in between. So it takes practice. It takes practice to say it. It takes practice to learn to differentiate it. There are these four words in Malayalam: kalike, kulike, karike, kurike, right? And it's like to eat, to dig, to take a bath. They mean different things. And when you look at them written Malayalam, nearly identical with the exception of one letter. And that one letter, that R sound, and it's usually written as a ZH when you're writing in English, makes, can you imagine if you got it wrong? Go take a bath. No, go dig a hole.
Oh,
yeah. You know, like silly things like that. But that's why you have to learn some of the script. And you've got to be very intentional about those sounds. It's a retroflex tongue that moves but doesn't hit the palate. So if you, when you say the word America, that's the closest you'll get to it, that R in America. America.
Okay.
But it takes intention and commitment to get that sound right. So our latest development in our cards is, I'm calling them superstar sounds. And so we'll have a key as to where those sounds are made, what those sounds are, and you can jump on the website and hear what that sound is supposed to be. So I feel like by including that, families are going to have more success, right? Now, the other thing too is we're going to include facts about the language. It'll be all about Malayalam. You know, how many people speak it? Where do they speak it? For example, the word mango is derived from Malayalam, manga.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And you know, little cute little facts like that. Again, to make this language seem like a gift to this child. You know, did you know how cool your language is? And here are some fun ways, you know, to learn it and to say it. So that we're really excited about that. And I'm hoping to build more activity books. Next year, Urdu, Bengali, oh gosh, what am I missing? Punjabi, those are the three that I'll be working on for next year. And I have to say, the process of production has been so wonderful because I don't speak Punjabi, I don't speak Telugu, but I find people who do. And I'll get 2 to 3 sources who work with me. And this is the most amazing part, unintended part of this business, is that I've gotten to work with a lot of retired uncles and aunties.
Oh, I love that.
You know, parents will be like, hey, my dad, he's retired. He needs something to do. He speaks Telugu. He can help you with this. Or my dad is speaks Punjabi. He loves what you're doing. He loves what you do with your Hindi cards. Can he help you make the Punjabi cards? Sure, uncle. And I have the best time with these sources, you know, talking to them on the phone, learning about their lives, learning about what it was like for them growing up in India and, you know, why they want to teach.
For people who are listening and are equally in love with this idea as much as I am, please tell us where we can find you, where we can get in touch, how we can find your products.
Absolutely. So I am really active on Instagram. I post there daily, including language tips, you know, fun, relatable stuff and vocabulary, all kinds of fun things. So if you are interested in that, please follow me at Bhasha Kids, and that's spelled BHASHAKIDS. And our website is bhashakids.com, where you can find our vocabulary decks as well as our digital downloads. I'm also on Etsy. I am also selling through Kula Village, which is an ethnic marketplace, which brings together a lot of different products, both home decor as well as children's learning products. I am on Facebook and Twitter, but Instagram is where I live right now. It's like the best place to see our daily content, and we try to be inspirational there, informative and inspirational. And I am looking, actually, put the plug out there. I'm looking for resellers in the UK and in Australia. So if you're interested in working with us, please reach out to me. And I'm going to drop my email address. Super easy. Anita@bhashakids.com. That's ANITA @ bhashakids.com and reach out to me there. Tell me that you heard about us on Speaking Tongues podcast with Elle. Oh, and I would also love to offer Elle's listeners a discount to come to our store and check us out. And we also have gift cards. So if you use the code SPEAKING15, SPEAKING15, you will get 15% off all of our products.
Thank you so much, Anita. Thank you for extending that gracious code to our listeners. And absolutely. Thank you so much. And I learned so much from you in this conversation. I have like more questions, but I know I want to be mindful of your time. But
yeah, I can hear the little ones.
We can talk again. Yeah, I really had such an amazing time chatting with you. And I like to end each episode with the same question. And that is, do you have any, well, let me take a step back, because I don't know if I said this. I'm going to add all of those links that you just shared into the show notes so that anyone who is listening can just pop into the show notes and get in touch with you really quickly. I like to end each episode with the same question, and that is, do you have any jokes, tongue twisters, cool slang words, idioms, words of wisdom, or words of advice in Malayalam or in any other Indian language to share?
Well, I'll say this. I am, as a learner, I don't want to make your listeners suffer with my accent, but I'm going to tell you where to find them. There is a wonderful lady on TikTok, Instagram, Satya Shah. She does the most hilarious tongue twisters in Malayalam. She's quite popular. And she also speaks many South Indian languages. So check her out. And Elikutti is great for also learning Malayalam from an English perspective. Now, for me personally, I will say there are just a few phrases that I use constantly. And they mean different things to me. Adipoli means like, that's awesome. That's great. You know, you're like, that's just cool, right? That's a good one.
Adipoli.
Someone's going to write to be like, girl, I said that wrong. But that's what it means. Adipoli.
This is why we do this. So we can practice and I can practice. And
we're learning.
Send the messages to me, not to Anita.
Here's the other one that I say constantly, and everyone will know this, is ayo. Ayo. Something happened that was bad. Ayo. Something happened that shocked me or surprised me. Ayo. I always say this 5 or 6 times a day, you know, and the meaning kind of changes based on the connotation and the tone of voice.
Yeah.
Now, the very last one I would share with you, it's kind of, it's touching to me. I would say this. You know, in other languages, you have words, one word that can mean a whole expression, right? And it can connote a whole term of endearment. So my mom used to call me mole, which is like young daughter, my sweet little one, right? And I miss it. My mom passed away 6 years ago, and I never hear that word anymore, you know? And I didn't realize how much it meant to me until it wasn't being said to me anymore. And so I want to encourage listeners and parents out there, use these terms of endearment with your kids. That in itself is a language input, and it will create a memory that they will cherish, you know, for the rest of their lives, you know?
Right.
So mole is it's a very special word to me.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much for sharing that, Anita.
Yay! We did it!
We did it. So thank you so much again for this lovely conversation. And we have to chat again soon, because there's so much more that I could ask you. And we didn't even get to talk about food. Before I let you go, just don't think about this too much, but after we've been talking for some time with me, with anyone else, in the first language that comes to your head, what is the best way to say goodbye?
Oh, goodbye. Well, oh gosh, I thought about it too much.
You did.
The first language that came to my head was Spanish, adios.
Adios.
But I will say in Malayalam, you can also end with namaskar as you can begin with namaskar, right? Not namaste, that's North Indian or kind of namaskar, namaskaram is what we say in South India. But when you really just want to say, see you later in Malayalam, it's literally, it's pinakanam.
Pinakanam.
Yeah, I'm going to see you then. Pinakanam.
Pinakanam, Anita. Thank you so much. And I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Al.
Bye.
Bye.